in the SEAL teams, no one can look over your shoulder. You have to have self-responsibility. My mom committed suicide when she was 29 years old. I was without a relationship with my father. And those kinds of kids that go through those situations, it makes you strong. The challenge is it made me strong at resisting everything outside of me that was good for me.
The Happy Healthy Human podcast will help you build your happy, healthy life. Your host, Paul Levitin, is a board-licensed health and wellness coach, nutrition coach, personal trainer, and behavior change specialist with over 10 years of experience helping people create positive life change. Each week, he discusses topics that will help you understand yourself, why you do the things you do, and how to take steps to create the life of your dreams. He talks with experts from therapists to addictions counselors, coaches, trainers, CEOs, financial planners, and more. If you've ever wondered how can you become the best, happiest, healthiest version of yourself, you've come to the right place.
Christopher Maher is a former Navy SEAL, as well as a writer, coach, entrepreneur, and musician. Christopher endured intense physical, mental, and emotional stress as a child, which led him to his journey towards developing the mental and physical tools for eliminating his unresolved stress. By combining a SEAL mindset with modern stress management strategies, Christopher taught himself to free his body and mind from generational trauma and pain. Christopher has studied traditional Chinese medical practices and is currently pursuing his master's and doctorate degrees in traditional Chinese medicine. Christopher's journey and story are so interesting to me because of all of the various paths that he's been down and the fact that he's done it all by choice. None of it was forced on him. And you'll learn more about that as we dive deeper into the episode. His mindset and worldview is enlightening, and I can't wait for you to hear and learn from him. Just a note, full transparency, there are some audio issues in this episode. And there's a slight echo during some of my speaking personally, and I apologize for that. I tried to fix it, but I couldn't get it out. But the content and the knowledge that Christopher brought to this episode was just too good for me to not share it with you. So I hope that you'll bear with me for this because it will 100% be worth it in the end. And with that, enjoy my conversation with Christopher Maher.
What made you want to decide to become a Navy SEAL?
The main factor was a magazine. And at the time, the Naval Special Warfare Center produced a biannual magazine about SEAL training. And I saw on the cover, there were like 5 or 6 or 7 boat crews of guys running down the beach with a telephone pole on their shoulder. And as soon as I saw that image, I just had this guttural response, like, I want to do that. And I had the feeling that they were going to challenge me. Physically, I was going to get challenged from the grimace on the guys' faces. I could tell emotionally I was going to be challenged. I could tell definitely energetically I was going to be challenged, and spiritually I was going to be challenged. So I was looking for a challenge. Other guys in the SEAL teams are motivated for very different reasons. I was never someone waking up like, God and country. I never thought like that. I was always more universal and more global in my mindset. But I definitely knew that I was at a crucial time in my life, and I needed a rite of passage in order to be able to wake up into manhood and be able to accomplish and experience the things that I wanted to. Inside, there was this knowing that I have to be pushed. And once I set my eyes in that direction, I got exactly what I asked for. I got pushed. I got pushed every day, a little bit further and a little bit further and a little bit further, till I got to the place where I could be really self-responsible and have the ability to execute with flaws, of course, because I'm human, yet get to a point where I could buff and sand and polish each day and acquire a skill or an experience that made me feel at peace or satisfied with the world around me.
You mentioned there that you wanted to be challenged and you needed to be pushed. Is that something that you always had in you, like as a kid or you know, in your high school years? Like, were you always looking to be challenged in some way, or where did that come from?
I think because I went to boarding school growing up, and kids who are in boarding school would rather be home. And I mean, at least that's my assumption. I wanted to be home, and a lot of kids that I talked to that I went to boarding school with, they would have preferred to be home. So I think when I was in boarding school, I was resistant around getting pushed because it felt like I needed to be rebellious to find or claim some sense of my own self or journey. And so I never took advantage of all the opportunities that were available to me in boarding school. Like, you're talking to someone who went to the most well-endowed boarding school on the entire planet, right? It's worth $16.5 billion. I had every opportunity to excel. And I spent a majority of my time being indifferent, disassociated. And then finally, when I picked up speed and steam, more like my junior year, then I was okay. And then I was up for being challenged. But for the most part, I was against being challenged.
What do you think that it was? Because I feel like most people know this, right? Inherently, that we need a little extra push. Most people are not so intrinsically motivated in the way that they will actually go out and get the thing that they truly want. And that's what everyone is always looking for, that magic pill of motivation or that thing that makes you say, like, I know what I have to do to get this thing, but I actually have to get myself to do it. So what was the thing that kind of clicked and pushed you to make you actually act and make those decisions?
Yeah, I was always able to take action on things that I believed in. But wherever things seemed unfair in any way, shape, or form, and they were pushed upon me, which means they were involuntary, I was resistant. Once I got out of boarding school and I sort of got to, like, jump around, I opened a business when I was 19. I went to college when I was 17. And I got to dip my toe in the water of different things. And I felt like I was calling my own shot, like it was my choice. Someone was enforcing my hand into it. Then the voluntary aspect of my goals gave me a lot of motivation. Well, whenever someone was telling me I need to do something, I got demotivated. And I just think that that comes when you're, how do I say it? My mom committed suicide when she was 29 years old, right? I was without a relationship with my father. And, you know, those kinds of kids that go through those situations, it makes you strong. The challenge is it made me strong at resisting everything outside of me that was good for me. Well, once I got out of that dynamic, I let go of that resistance and I got very vested. And the way that I did it is I wrote down a list of all the things I wanted to experience when I was like 18, 19 years old. And once that was on the list, there was no stopping me. And it's sort of like, you hear other people say this, that they heard a voice or they felt like God was talking to them or an angel. And I felt like when I was writing my list, that list was divinely guided and that was my destiny. And I had no idea what was going to be involved. I just knew that I had to have those experiences in order to have the other experiences that I wanted.
I was wondering if you would mind sharing some of what was on that list.
Yeah, on the list was becoming a U.S. Navy SEAL. And I knew once that happened, I was a poet at the time and I wanted to write some books. And so what also was on the list is I wanted to be an author of two different books. The other thing on the list is I wanted to be a singer-songwriter and a producer. And that was on the list. And I wanted to get a master's degree and study something that was helpful to other people. And then once I had my list made out, and this, I made a bucket list before anyone even knew a bucket list existed. This is like 1987. And I executed on my bucket list.
I think it's really interesting. You know, you bring up something that I think is very common in human nature. And that's something I like to talk about a lot on the show, is like the underpinnings of a lot of the stuff is human nature. And you brought up, so in boarding school, it was very restrictive, and that made you seek freedom. And then mm-hmm. when you graduated, you had freedom, and that mm-hmm. actually made you seek
structure. Restriction.
Yeah. Right. So I'm curious, and then kind of that, and then you put yourself into the Navy SEALs, which is the most structured, probably restrictive thing, right? If you don't like being told what to do, it's probably the worst place in the world for you. But
actually it's the opposite.
Really?
The thing about the SEAL teams, it's the least restricted of all the military forces, because SEAL team platoons are very small. Okay. I mean, SEAL teams are very small. There's only a handful of guys there. And SEAL teams platoons are even smaller. So you're responsible. From the first time I got at the SEAL Team 5 and I was in my platoon, I was pretty much responsible for a department. And because in the SEAL teams, no one can look over your shoulder. You have to have self-responsibility. And that's one of the key things. And because the assumption that's made for guys that graduate from SEAL training is they drill into you teamwork. And so this is about teamwork. This isn't about someone bossing me around. Like the captain of my platoon, he never gave me any orders, right? I just understood, like, hey, this is what we do. This is how we prepare for an op. Okay, this is your list of things to have. And then I worked everything out of my own timing. And I figured out the energy that I wanted to bring to the platoon. So the SEAL teams are very wide open. There's no book in the SEAL teams that tells you how to operate correctly for this mission. We're literally pulling this stuff out of our rear ends. Okay, I think we'll do this. Maybe we do this. Maybe I'll use these as call signs instead. Maybe we check in here instead of there. And it's this very cooperative experience.
So, and just the way you're explaining that, it already tells me a lot of why that would be so beneficial, not only in SEALs, but after. So I'm curious, what are some of the things that you learned in your SEAL training that in the years since then you found the most value in leading a normal life, an entrepreneurial life, and crossing out those other parts of your list that you were trying to get to?
Yeah, I think for me, the thing you're going to learn in SEAL training, I think a lot of guys in the SEAL teams would agree with me, is that discomfort is okay. Like, discomfort leads to success. And as an entrepreneur, I mean, all kinds of things are uncomfortable, right? Like your bank account's going down, you have less customers, your marketing isn't working. Like, you gotta be okay with discomfort. And the more discomfort that guys are willing to take, the more likely they are to graduate from SEAL training. And so that was perfect for everything that I was gonna do in my life. Because I'm okay with heavy eyes. I'm okay with a stiff back, right? I'm okay with 3 hours of sleep. I'm okay being really, really hungry and still having to work and not have food in my body. And so I've used discomfort as an opportunity to grow beyond my own limitations and achieve and experience the things that I want to have.
That, I mean, is probably the best piece of advice that anyone can ever get, is simply to be comfortable with discomfort. And I think that really sums up pretty much everything in the human experience, right? It's delayed gratification and instant gratification. Can I deal with this discomfort now? Everything that we want comes down the road in the future. And it comes on the other side of doing something uncomfortable. Just like you said, that's why I love these type of conversations, because the stuff in SEAL training mirrors the entrepreneurial journey perfectly, mirrors the journey of a writer perfectly. Everyone wants to write a book, but no one wants to write, or no one wants to sit down and look at a blank page, you know? So it's one of those things I really love. And another thing that I see some crossover here with, that I'm curious if you could expand on a bit, that I know that you are interested in and have trained and studied in is Taoism. And that's something that I'm very interested in Eastern modalities of thinking, philosophy, religion. I don't know even really what you would call that type of thing, but I'm curious how you got into that and how you see it crossing or not with some of the SEAL training that you got in the past.
Yeah, so this is great. Last night is like a perfect example, and then I'll digress and explain everything. So I decided to join a gym. Because I've had a desire to do some of the stuff with my body that I used to do in the SEAL teams, which is like basically calisthenics, push-ups, pull every kind of push-up imaginable, any kind of pull-up imaginable, any kind of dip imaginable. And then what I did is I started that hour with going deep into that. And then what I mixed in between every one of those sets is all the stuff that I learned from yogic postures, structural biomechanics, exercise physiology, kinesiology. So I mixed all the wellness in. And then I went into the sauna at the very end, the last 15 minutes, and I practiced all the Taoist meditations, right? The inner smile, circulating the microcosmic orbit, doing the six healing sounds, getting my mind into a real peaceful, calm state. And so in that hour, I basically took everything that I learned over my entire life and I combined it into one 60-minute hour of amazement. So when I was working in the very beginning, the first 25 minutes, I was working as hard as I worked in SEAL training, in the SEAL teams. There was no rest. There was no break. I was literally just going from one thing to the next. There was literally maybe 1 second of break because I'm putting a weight down, right? And then I shifted at the very end to do the exact opposite. I went into complete stillness, right? And now I'm circulating, I'm following my breath, I'm getting present, I'm getting grounded, and I'm doing the two things that meet in the same place. See, for the Taoist, right, it's all about practice. It's all about diligence. It's all about commitment. It's all about discipline. It's all about focus. SEAL training is all about the same things, except we're using different exercises, right? The Taoist is pulling you in to get grounded internally, right? And SEAL teams and SEAL training is preparing me to be really grounded in my body so that I can deal with everything externally.
Yeah, it's so interesting when you juxtapose it like that, because a lot of people, I think, would think of the SEALs as being this, like, you know, big, brave, macho, strong, like you said, carrying logs, grimacing, that kind of thing. And now you're talking about, you know, finishing your workout, but even, you know, 10, 15 minutes of it, of an hour workout, that's like, you know, a quarter of your workout with deep breathing and yogic sounds. You know, it's something I talk about a lot on here. It's like, it's not either and, it's not either or, it's both and.
That's right.
Right. Yeah. People think that it has to be like the one way or the other. But when we can combine all of these things, and all of these things have underlying tones that are, you know, present anyway, you just have to learn to see them if you can keep going a little bit deeper. But I'm interested in that back half of that, right? Because I think everyone knows how to crush themselves with a workout, right? Now, it might not be the best workout, right? They might not have a background in biomechanics and kinesiology, but everyone knows how to sweat. Everyone knows how to go grab the battle ropes and jam on them or do 100 burpees or whatever it is. But what a lot of people don't know how to do is the back half, which is the calming down, getting into a state of rest and relaxation. And we're so keyed up in our day-to-day lives in the year 2023, 2024 almost, that people don't even know what it's like to be relaxed. So I'm curious, something I've heard you talk about before and you've written about, I know, is the fight or flight response and how we can learn a little bit about that false dichotomy. Could you explain what you mean by that?
Yeah. So when you look at the nervous system, the body and the brain, there's an opportunity for these three things to work together or to oppose each other consistently, right? And so when both hemispheres of my brain are turned on electrically, my body is balanced structurally. And it makes it very easy for me to drop into a meditative state, regardless of what's going on around me. Okay. If I were in a dry sauna all on my own, it's very easy, right? But when you have people coming in and out that you don't know, they're absolute strangers. Okay. And there's all kinds of noise going on around you. And it's 145 degrees. Okay. You're sweating everywhere and your heart rate is up. Then can you still maintain a meditative, clear, mindful state while you're in that circumstance? And that's sort of very similar to SEAL training. In SEAL training, you're in the opposite situation. You're in very cold water, right? You're required to sit there and be quiet. You got waves crashing all over your head. You're shaking constantly. Your teeth are chattering. You're frozen on the inside. And you have to maintain this state of a strong sense of yourself, because otherwise, if you lose it for a moment, the instructor staff is giving you every opportunity to quit. Like last night, I could have quit. I could have said, nah, man, it's too hot in here. And I decided, nope, this is uncomfortable, and I'm going to complete on the things that I told myself. When you're operating in the opposite way, meaning a lateralized state of function, it makes it very easy for somebody to quit on themselves, because only one hemisphere of their brain is turned on electrically. And so they're locked into an inappropriate stress state, which is a state of fight or flight, freeze or fawn. And when you pull yourself out of that state, meaning you reduce your generational, your individual, and your familial and communal stress loads and tension and toxicity out of your system, it makes it very easy to drop into either a SEAL team mindset, we're going to get the job done, or a Taoist mindset, which is I'm going to get present at all costs.
Something you mentioned just now when you were talking about being in the ocean, right? During SEAL training, it's the same thing. I really like that, again, that parallel right there. Right? So like you said, one is sitting in extreme heat, one is sitting in extreme cold. But something you said was that you had to come to your sense of self. And I'm curious what you mean by that and how that is helpful or why it's so necessary.
Yeah, what I mean by that is when you're in cold water like that, right? And, you know, in my class, we classed up 149 guys. And out of that class, only a handful of guys graduated. And so the ones who had less of a sense of themselves, their goals were altered in the middle of their discomfort. And when you have a strong sense of yourself and your purpose and your vision and your mission, the discomfort is irrelevant because you have a vision. Right? It's different to have a goal. Like I say, look, goals are easy to achieve. Completing on your vision, oh, that's more difficult because you have to really think about this is my life, right? When I have a goal, goals are, they're right in front of you. They're a month away. They're 3 months away. But a vision is something that's 30, 40, 50 years long. Okay. And when you're in touch with your vision and you have that good, strong sense of yourself, there's no level of discomfort that's going to distract you away from your vision. As long as you have a good sense of yourself. If you're shaky in your sense of self, it's going to be very easy to distract you and it's going to be very easy to ring the bell.
So if I'm hearing this and the way I'm kind of taking this in is like a goal is like something that I want to do, right? I want to accomplish or something like that. Right. But my sense of self is like, this is who I am as a person.
That's right. A vision is who I am. That's absolutely correct. A vision is who I am. A goal is something I want to do. And so because I wrote down my list, mm-hmm. my bucket list, I had my vision. So when I got into SEAL training, I could care less how cold it was, right? I could care less how uncomfortable my muscles are, how much lactic acid I have in my body, how hungry I am. They were going to have to throw me out because I had a vision, which means I had a purpose. And when you're living on purpose, it makes it very difficult to get that person off course.
This is interesting because it's not that it's easy. Obviously, this everything that you're talking about is extremely challenging. But when you have a big vision, as you said, like when you have that, like, I'm going to get through SEAL training, like I am not going to ring that bell. I am, like you just said, they're going to have to drag me out of here before I give up. That's that big vision, that big sense of self gives you something to work towards. But what do you say to people who don't have that? If I'm just going through my regular 9-to-5 job and I don't have that big thing that's anchoring me, that's when I feel like people get...
Yeah, they get lost. And, you know, I think if I were coaching someone or advising them, I'd say, look, let's just sit here in the quiet, right? And close your eyes and tune in. What did you want to do when you were a little kid? Okay. What are the things that really excite you the most? Like, if you had all the money in the world, what would you be doing? Oh, I would do this and this and it. Like, literally within a millisecond, it starts dumping out of their mouth. And if you can get their mind quiet enough and you can lean into them and push into them and investigate them successfully, then the likelihood that they're going to figure out what their vision is and be able to take a step towards that is really, really high. And so I think for the listener, grab a chair, sit in front of the mirror, and ask yourself, why am I here? Like, what am I doing here on earth? What am I here to learn? What am I here to experience? What am I here to do? Who am I here to become? And then once you talk to yourself enough, once you get intimate enough with yourself, once you get intimate often enough with yourself, it makes it very easy to hear your soul. When you're distracted by everything on the outside, it makes it very difficult to hear yourself. And so look dead into your eyes. They always tell us when we're growing up, the eyes are the windows of the soul. So get in front of a mirror and look into your eyes and get your human personality to ask your soul, what are you doing here? Like, why did you really come here? Okay, I got it. This is why I came here. All right, now take a baby step. Tell somebody, I think this is why I'm here. Okay, well, that sounds interesting. How are you going to go about that? I have no idea. Okay? And it's less about taking the action, and it's about getting to the place of understanding, and then secondly, being witnessed by another human. Right. So, for instance, I have a kid here who's a high level athlete, and I asked him, "Look, why are you really here?" And his coach was here too. And he said he gave me some blah 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 blah. And I was like, "No, that's not what I asked you. I asked you why you're really here." And then he had to sit back and think about it. And I said to him, "Look, you got to have a mission. You got to have a purpose. You got to have a vision. You got this goal. You want to win an NCAA championship. Bravo." So do, you know, 13,000 other athletes. But why are you here? What's your vision? What's your purpose? What's your mission? That's what it's going to take to win. And he started to get clear. And once you have that clarity, it's easy to take the next eventual step, which is taking heartfelt action to your own benefit. And this is where most humans get lost, because they find it difficult to love themselves. And the way that you love yourself is by taking heartfelt action to your own benefit, which is a step, an actionable step towards my vision, towards my purpose, towards my goal. Take an actionable step. And then once you take one actionable step, it makes it a little easier to take two. and be patient with yourself. Your job is to fail miserably so that you can learn. And if you can get very comfortable with failing and informing everyone about your failures, your chance to succeed at becoming who you are and growing into your vision, to become your vision, is very, very, very high.
Yeah, wow. There's so much that I want to kind of double click and expand on. One thing that you mentioned, right, the self-love piece, and this is something that it's almost cliche at this point because people talk about it so much, but I don't think people get it quite right. Because I think what's so important about what you just said about why self-love is such a important piece of that puzzle, because like you just said, we have to have the vision. You have to know that knowledge of self. What am I here for? Right? If you can sit and have that conversation with yourself and say, like, look into your soul, look into your deep into your own eyes, into your soul's purpose, everything that you just said, and you figure out what it is. I think you, for you, I'm here to be a writer. I know I have a message to spread, and like, this is what I have to do. To me, that is what makes this all easy, because it's like, how can I not give myself that? If I know what I'm actually here to do, then taking the action step to do that should be the easiest thing in the world, because I just said, this is my soul's purpose on this earth. This is my one true reason for being here. And that means any action that isn't taking me towards that, I'm hamstringing myself. And any action that is getting me towards it is getting me closer to my soul's purpose. So it should be a no-brainer for me. But that all hinges on, do I love myself? Do I think I deserve it? Will I actively give myself the thing that I'm saying that I need? And I think that's a hard thing for a lot of people. And I'm curious, I know that, you know, obviously you've had a lot of different journeys in your life. What is it that you think makes it so hard for people to take that step and give themselves what they're literally knowing that they need to live out their purpose?
I think it comes down to training. Most kids are taught from a very young age to be selfless. And that selfishness is, well, one, it has a negative connotation. And two, if you're ever called selfish, you might as well be called the devil. And so I think most people are very uncomfortable going against their own child rearing, because most of those ideas came in when our minds were in a precognitive state of function. And our conscious mind is then competing with our subconscious limiting beliefs. Like, look, it's great to be selfless, all right? But at the end of the day, that has many problems as being excessively selfish does. And so how does one find a balance, and how does one start to be honest with themselves and go, hey, maybe some of the beliefs that my parents were projecting into me were limiting. And maybe I should go talk to my mom about this and go, Mom, I think your idea around selflessness as the way to heaven is flawed. And I want to challenge this idea, because I think in order for me to experience a bit of what I want for myself, I have to be inherently selfish. I've got to take time for my studies. Like, I know you want me to come home for the summer, but remember, I'm in this very difficult PhD program. And if I do that, I'm going to be very distracted, because you know what I'm like. And I want to hear from you that you're going to be okay with me being selfish. Yet I know, and I'm worried that you're going to be judging me. And I think the most difficult part of people choosing their own vision and stepping into their own power and to be self-focused and self-driven is that they want to avoid punishment, rejection, humiliation, discomfort, and violence. Because children, when they're very young and they make up things about reality that are false, they have no idea of knowing that those things aren't true. Like, a little kid thinks, because my mom was in a red dress and she yelled at my brother, that means every time she wears red, I'm in trouble. Because children are precognitive. And so how does, you know, the listener who's tuning into our conversation sort of break that pattern? And I think it's simple. I think you pay attention to your beliefs, you write them down and you look at them, and you ask one simple question. Is that 100% truth? And if you figure out that that isn't the entire truth, then figure out what's true about it for you and what's false. And then start to follow your guttural responses, even if they go against your childhood rearing and the limiting beliefs of your parents.
One thing I just want to really hammer home for the listeners is what you just said about selfishness right there. And I think that's a huge, huge roadblock for a lot of people. It's like you said, we've been raised being selfless is the highest value for a lot of people. But what I used to teach my clients, especially in the gym, you know, it came up a lot. It's like being selfish is important. The best version of you is the version that can be the best for other people. So this idea of like, I have to give up everything else to do for others. It's like, then the world is getting a half-assed shitty version of you. And you can't be the best you, the best mom, the best dad, the best sister, the best brother, uncle, aunt, coworker, boss, subordinate, whatever it is the strongest, healthiest, best slept, best eaten, well-read, best version of you. So this selfishness, although yes, it's about being about you. You taking an hour away from your family to go work out. You making sure that you're making the right choices for your health. It's actually making everyone else better, right? A rising tide raises all ships. So, you know, I saw this all the time with like moms. I was a personal trainer for a long time. And this was like the stay-at-home mom who'd be like, I can't get away from my kids to do, you know, 2 or 3 hours of working out every week. And it's like, that's what you need to do the most, because you'll come back from that invigorated. You'll be stronger. You'll have a better quality of life. You'll be able to lift your kids and do more things. And it's just a complete flip of the way that we were raised and the way that we were programmed, as you said. And so I'm curious if there's anything else from your own life, either as an adult or recently or in the past, if you could give an example of a time that, like you were just saying, of having to undo that programming or questioning something and saying like, is this actually true? And having to kind of rewrite some of this stuff that was maybe put in you from when you were much younger.
Yeah, I think what happened for me is in 2001, in the summertime, I decided to go on a fast, okay? And I was in the middle of my fast, and there was a tennis match on. A friend of mine's mother came in the living room and said, hey, and it was in the middle of the match, and she said, hey, can I talk to you for a second? And I turned my head to her, and I said, no. And I went right back to watching the tennis match. Well, then her daughter comes in 30 minutes later, bothered and upset that I told her mom no. What she was unable to understand is that's the first time I ever told anyone no. And then we had a conversation afterwards, and that is when I started to get free of these levels of programming that came into me when my mind was in a precognitive state of function and my parents or the sphere of influence that I was under had no idea what the outcome was going to be with these limiting beliefs that they were projecting into me. And so that was the start of me saying no to a lot of people. And the way that I discovered that was this. I was training this guy. He was a professional volleyball player. And really good guy, super, super funny. Went to USC, and I would go over his house. He'd come over to my place sometimes, and I made some food. And I brought in, I was like, hey, man, I made us some food. And he goes, I don't want that. And he got up, and he went, and he made his own food. And I was like, I never had that experience before. Like, you make food, you do something for somebody, they're grateful. They even eat a little bit of it, even if they don't like it, just to say, well, thanks for the effort. He was like, yeah, I don't want that. And then I was like, ooh. And on one end, I was kind of offended. But on my drive home, I kind of flipped the script. And I was like, that was amazing. He was very clear on what he wanted for dinner. And he said no to my sharing, and he went and made his own thing. And to him, it was like, it was as simple as breathing. He was clear on what worked for him. Now, if you do that in Pennsylvania, where I'm from, people are going to look at you like you're selfish. You're going to get labeled like what? And so I began to let go of these ideas that I created about reality that were false. Everyone has a right to eat what they want for dinner. And no one's being selfish when they choose to tell me, I don't want what you made. I want something different, because their body knows best.
That's such an interesting story, and that it's so cool, like how something so simple can cause such an inflection point and literally change the entire direction of your life. Because it's just like you said, you know, we've been taught, programmed, whatever you want to say, that you say yes when someone offers you something. It's the polite thing to do, and you always want to be polite. But again, sometimes we take that too far because it's been so burned into our own head that we do it to our own detriment. And this is the classic person who's so nice that they can never say no to anything. And then they end up being overscheduled, overbooked, overworked, over anything. And saying no is theoretically the easiest thing in the world, just two little letters, N-O, but it's the hardest thing in the world for so many people. So you mentioned that, like, after that, maybe like the floodgates opened and you were able to start saying no to a lot more. How did you see your life change after that? Or what new opportunities started to take place when you started to say no to more things?
I had more time for myself. I had much more time for myself. And I had more quiet time. And so I was less interested in doing things that were social and somewhat destructive in the way that I think about. Anything I put in my body that's unhealthy to me is destructive. That's the place where I'm coming from. And I decided to spend more time getting to know myself, questioning whether or not was I doing this because this is what everybody else does, or was I doing this because this is what I want to do. And then people would invite me to things and I'd say, hey, look, this sounds great, but to be honest with you, I want to have a quiet, relaxing night tonight. So call me again when you have your next thing going on. And I would turn things down. And when I turned things down with them, I turned things up for me. And then I started to get really comfortable being by myself. Because before, you know, when you grow up, you're in a boarding school, there's a minimum of 16 kids in a student home. So every place I go for the boarding school that I'm in, there's more like, the most likely there's hundreds or thousands of kids. Okay. And now I got to value time alone. And that radically changed, because that gave me more space to be self-introspective and to figure out what really worked for me and what really worked against me. And what did I really enjoy? What did I like? What was okay? What was really exciting? What was a terrible waste of my time, energy, and resources? And I got in touch with me. I got to figure out, who am I? What do I want to do? Who do I want to do it with? What makes me feel good? What makes me feel bad?
Yeah, that question that you asked there, which was simply, do I actually want to do this thing? Or is this something that, you know, I've just been programmed to do, or just other people want to do, so I'm going along with it? Or is this actually my thought? It's always something I challenge people to kind of dig in a little bit more, is like, don't take your, even your own thoughts at face value, and just think, where did this come from? Like, where did this want, this need, this desire come from? And I had a very similar journey to you, where it was exactly the being okay with not doing things. And for me, that was, sounds similar to you, which was partying, drinking, doing, you know, substances and things like that. And I had to be okay with being like, okay, all my friends are going out, I could go out with them and get drunk and do all the things that we do, or I could stay home alone and I could read a book and I could meditate and I could do all these things. And that's what I started to do. But it's not easy at first. Like, it's the FOMO, it's the I'm missing out, it's the I have to be alone with my thoughts, which when you're used to numbing your thoughts with alcohol or with TV or with scrolling or whatever the millions of things we numb with these days, is, it's definitely a challenge. So, you know, I think that it's such a powerful thing to be able to just do say no to something and to take that time for yourself. And obviously we've seen that play out for you. And I want to know now, well, I know part of the answer to this, but on your list was writing two books. I know you've written at least one. So during that time, can you tell us about what you've written, about your new book, and what you've been going on in terms of like the art and the things you've been creating?
Okay. Yeah. Well, I've written five workbooks. Okay. Around the work that I do. I'm on my second sort of, I guess, biographical teachable novel. And I'm a musician, so I write music. And my album is now available on my website. And, you know, I'm creating all the time. So those things feel really good. I take most of the lessons from life that are difficult. And I start jotting them down and thinking about them. And then I create some way of communicating them and teaching them, because I believe that anything that was valuable for me can be valuable for someone else. And I have this very interesting relationship with one of my buddies that I went to boarding school with named Gordon Reed. And for the last 10 years, he has sent me a quote every day for 10 years. So every day I wake up, it's the first thing I read. Right? I've got a motivational quote every single day for 10 years. And so he's always willing to share something with me that he finds. So the things that I figure out, I want to share with others. So I create more opportunities for people to have access to the wisdom and the experiences that I've learned from. And that, for me, I think is the most powerful creative force that I have going for myself. Is my willingness to share.
Yeah, I mean, I think so too. I totally agree. That's why I have this show. That's why I like to do this type of thing and talk to people like you, is because I like to learn. I like to read and listen to podcasts and go to seminars and do the work. It's something that I feel fortunate that I enjoy at some in some regard. A lot of people don't want to read 100 books or go to spend a weekend going to a seminar for 3 days or something like that. Like, I like that kind of stuff, but then I also feel like what I can do is to distill this information down and make it more digestible and more palatable for people who aren't as nutso in the head as me and aren't going to do all of those things. So I appreciate greatly what you're doing. And the last question that I'm going to leave you with is the same question I ask all my guests, which is simply, if you had one action step that you could give listeners right here today, as soon as this episode is over, as soon as they take their headphones out, to start living a happier, healthier life, what would it be?
It sounds simple. Take a soothing hot bath. Put on a candle, look into the candle, and repeat some I am statements. Maybe you look into that candle in the hot soothing bath and you say, I am love 36 times. I am selfishness 36 times. I am self-focus 36 times. I am happy 36 times. I am joy 36 times. I am peace 36 times. And then finish it up again with I am love 36 times. And you can say it as fast as you want. And by the end of that bath, I promise you, you will be feeling very, very, very good.
Well, I love that. And I always love when people come and give actual simple act. Their point of an action step is that it should be actionable and it should be simple and almost seem too easy, because I want people to actually do it. And if you're listening to this and you're going, well, I don't have time to take a bath, it's like, then you got a bigger issue on your hands. So I think that that's great. So Chris, thank you so much for being here. I'm going to have links to all of your stuff in the show notes for anyone, but if people want to get in touch with you, where's the best place on the internet to find you?
The best place is go to my website, truebodyintelligence.com. If you go to YouTube, punch in True Body Intelligence. If you go to Facebook, punch in True Body Intelligence. If you go to Instagram, punch in True Body Intelligence. And you'll find me.
Okay, amazing. Well, I'll put links to that. Anyone who's listening can click that in the show notes, and I'll have links for your books as well. Thank you so much for being here, Chris. This was truly enjoyable.
Thank you. Thank you, Paul. It's been awesome.
That's all for this week. Be sure to subscribe and follow the show so you don't miss a beat. Support the show by sending this episode to a friend or leaving a rating and review on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. Stay happy, stay healthy.